This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
The following program contains content of a sexual nature and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
That's right, you are on Joy 94.9 this evening as we recover from an amazing Pride yesterday. And as always, thank you to my beautiful purple boys. Another fabulous show from them. And of course, all the gossip happening around town as well. Now, it is Moist Mondays, which means it is time for the wet spot and time for us to get into our weekly topic. And I'm so super excited because I have an international guest this evening. Holly Howitt is joining me, and we're going to discuss so many amazing things tonight. We're going to talk about, and I know I'm going to end up getting this wrong about how they pronounce it, but it is about binary, free, gender, and all of the amazing things, how you identify with whether people use their gender or their genitals to identify and how it all works. Holly, welcome to the wet spot.
Thank you for having me, Sammy.
That's wonderful. Now, okay, so let's start off tonight by first talking about, now, you know, when I talk about you, I actually use the pronoun them and they.
Yeah, now, that's my preferred pronoun.
Right, yeah. So let's have a little bit of a chat first, start off with that.
Okay, so I guess it's important really to understand that for me, and I think for many others increasingly, I don't see gender as a binary, and that would be that there are only men and women. I think that that's far too simpler sort of idea, and that there's an entire grayscale of genders. Mm. And I also think the way that we currently speak about gender, we often conflate it or confuse it with our sort of biological sex or our genitals or our chromosomes. And so people that are born with penises, we call them men, and people who are born with vulvas, we call them women. And we know that that's not necessarily the case. We know from our trans brothers and sisters that that's not always the case. Mm. But what the sort of trans narrative, in terms of transitioning, we often think of that as from one to another. And that's perfectly true for many people. But there's also lots of people for whom it's not quite as binaried as that.
Because we also, you know, and it's something that, you know, I speak about a little bit on this show, and it's a particular passion of mine, is it seems to be that we quickly dismiss particularly our trans brothers and our sisters as, you know, as part of their journey of transitioning. Is not everyone has the same beginning and the same end and the same journey and the same tracks, and they're even travelling to the same country.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that person is not then correctly identified as in that binary of either male or female, mm, because their genitals don't match about how they want the world to see them. And I think, to me, that's it's that one of be the hardest, you know, I'm not trans, I have so many trans friends, but to me, I see it's one of the hardest battles that they face, and it is a battle for a lot of people.
Oh, well, I think there are some people who feel very strongly that they would like to have a certain type of body. Mm. So, for example, I think there are plenty of trans men for whom their breasts have always been an area of incongruence that they don't enjoy about their bodies. Mm. And for those men, I think absolutely, of course, have top surgery, do whatever you need to do as a human, which I think is the rule for actually all humans, to feel happy and aligned with your body. However, where my sort of line of thinking is, and what I do a lot of talking about at the moment, is that if we had a slightly different look at gender, if our markers that we said, now this means you're a man and this means you're a woman, were different, might there be some men that could happily celebrate their breasts, or some women who could live happily with their penis and enjoy it and use it as the beautiful sexual organ that it is and feel completely safe in their womanhood. And that's not saying that all people might choose not to have certain procedures, but it's one that I feel like the conflation can force people down a sort of rabbit hole to identify, to flip that binary. Yeah.
Well, that's right. And we also see, of course, you know, we are talking about either ends of the, you know, of exactly fitting into binaries. And then we also have, you know, our sisters that fit sort of into intersex, which is such a broad area to start with.
Yeah.
You know, and them being made to feel less than because their genitals also don't fit into these binaries as well.
Yeah. And I can't speak for intersex because I'm not intersex, but that's like, obviously what you say is correct, and there could be a chromosomal or hormonal reason why someone might have, like, there's quite a few different intersex conditions. But I think what's interesting about what you say, like, you almost passed down the baton of oppression, and I'll try and explain it sort of in the early days of gay liberation. The gay liberation movement was predominantly cis gay men that fought for gay rights. And when the lesbians wanted to be involved, there was almost like, don't weaken our front. You know, we've just started getting, because men are more powerful because we live in patriarchy, don't sort of sully our activism but with your lesbian needs. And eventually the lesbians, you know, joined rank, and then it was like, oh, now the bisexuals want in, you know, they're going to make us look even sillier because we've fought so hard about it being, you know, born this way, and now you bisexuals are confusing everything. But eventually, you know, the gay liberation included bisexuals. And then in recent history, we've had trans has joined that sort of camaraderie. And I think what is at risk of happening is, as we get trans rights, and I know we're nowhere near that in this country, in the UK, in the States, let alone the rest of the world, but as we start to get more acceptance of trans rights and seeing more binary trans people in the media, like Laverne Cox and, you know, and Transparent, the show that's just come on, you know, we're starting to see more acceptance of trans people. And in the same way that history has nudged out those just below on the oppression scale, I feel like that might be what happens with non-binary genders. And I feel like that might be also what happens with intersex. I feel like it's our job as the LGBTQIA spectrum to just be aware of that. Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I sort of see a little bit, and you know, I have a lot of people say, you know, we've fought against homophobia for so long, and we've fought against all of this discrimination for so long, but the one thing that I find within the, you know, the rainbow community, the queer community, is there is a lot of internalized discrimination between different areas of the community, as you said, you know, and it almost is layered in that battle of how the rights of the queer community has been fought over the years. Is we also have that discrimination that actually, you know, it's like we're fighting against each other a little bit in a way, and it's all this pulling that's going on.
I think, like any communities, there can be a hierarchy of queer enough and gay enough and trans enough, and we do have to be careful of that hierarchy. But I think also one of the reasons why gender and fighting the gender binary is a really interesting and provocative and sometimes quite controversial topic to talk about in lesbian, gay and bisexual circles is, actually, if you start deconstructing gender, and if you start taking away the fact that it's a binary, and if you accept that actually it can be a fluidity, and that we might change genders throughout one lifetime, perhaps even more than once, then what do you do to orientation? Orientation is about being a certain gender and being attracted to that other gender. Now, what happens if your hardcore identity is that you're a lesbian, and then your darling, sweetie lesbian wife transitions and suddenly you're in a heterosexual marriage? And this is something that we're seeing more and more in our communities, is when we start embracing that gender can be fluid, and people decide, actually, this identity of girl, this identity of woman, this doesn't fit me, actually. What does that mean to my partners? My cisgendered husband, my cunt-owning other partner? Like, who do I make them when I change my gender? Mm. And you know, and so on. So I think that's why it's so unsettling and so controversial, but also so important.
And I think we've seen that, you know. I've had a few friends, you know, I've got a few friends in similar, you know, similar areas. We had one of our very, very popular, amazing senators here in Western Australia, Louise Pratt, who, you know, a couple of not very long into her current relationship, her partner transitioned. And there was a lot of people, you know, even in the broader community, that couldn't understand this woman that's just been so out and so queer for so long, and all of a sudden was dating a partner that identified as a man. Mm. You know, it's almost like that whole argument that we had on Larry King with Anna Paquin, and all of a sudden, you know, him opening his ridiculous mouth and saying, oh, so you're not bisexual anymore because you're married to a man.
Precisely. Yeah.
So, you know, it's that it seems to be that whole what quite often, you know, a lot of people quickly dismiss with, you know, members of our community and our sisters that identify as bisexual, that, you know, it's about the heart of the person that they fall in love with, and it doesn't have anything to do with their genitals.
Yeah, absolutely. And that genitals might have very little to do with gender, especially if gender can change throughout life, and so can genitals, if you go down that route. I absolutely think that that's why it's such an important discussion to have in the lesbian, gay and bisexual community, especially as well, because when we talk about homophobia, which is one of the things that unites all of us, is so many of us have been bullied at school for being queer and known other queers that have been bullied at school, and it still remains a great risk to queer youth, suicide and mental health problems. Actually, when you think about what people are bullied for, they're not actually bullied for being gay, because in actual fact, most, you know, it starts at school, most children aren't engaging in relationships, romantic or sexual, when homophobia bullying starts. So what's actually being bullied is non-normative behaviour, not adhering to your gendered stereotype, not wanting to play football with the boys, or wanting to do the girl's hair, or wanting to have a short haircut and not play mummies and daddies. You know, they're the things that you get bullied for. It's not homophobia, it's genderphobia, really. So it starts there, and it affects all of us.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I said I have a 12-year-old son who has just started high school now, and you know, he's excited, wildly excited, because he's going to an amazing local high school here, Fitzroy, and it's just such a fabulous school. But, you know, all through primary school, he was bullied because he was a rainbow child. Mm. Up until I've met the love of my life. You know, he has, you know, two mummies, but he's had a mummy that's had girlfriends in the past, you know. And for him to try and explain about his family unit doesn't actually fit into this, you know, what his fellow students would say would be a normal family unit. Even our rainbow kids are actually copying that as well. And it's just because, again, it's what you said, it's not this normative, you know, even their family is not what fits into this normative box as well.
Right, exactly, yeah. And I think the more we can change that, the better. And I like to think that in 50 years, 100 years, we will have a completely different structure to how we bring up our children. And my idea of a utopia is that we wouldn't gender our children, so orientation would be irrelevant up until they decided who they liked.
We can hope for that around the same time that we never have to come out.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Anything.
Yeah, precisely. Yeah,
we're gonna have a quick listen to a message, and we're gonna be right back with Sammy and Holly in the Wet Spot on Joy. You're with Sammy and Holly. We get into the very, very deep talk about binary and gender and how you identify and who you are as a person, and of course about being able to, you know, we started off trying to talk about your history and then got very political because, you know, it's one of my favourite things to do. But I want to sort of go back into, because we started to talk about how you identify, and, you know, I use the pronouns of them and they when I address you. Now, so I wanted to sort of talk to you a little bit about why that is, you know, part of your journey.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay. Yeah, it feels like such a big question, but I reckon I'm up for the task, Sammy. So I was assigned female at birth because I own a vulva, and I have never had the feeling that I've been trapped in the wrong body. I haven't always liked my body, but I think that's much more to do with the gender norms of being female and what size I'm supposed to be and whatnot, but not the gendered markers of my body. But something that has been ever present in my life is a queer sexuality, and it was just sexuality. I now include it, my gender, as queer. But that was very much, it manifested with finding certain people attractive from quite a young age that just so happened to be gay men. And I liked gay men in a way that wasn't like I disliked being around gay men and thought that they were lovely. I just kind of wanted them to like me. And I remember an early boyfriend that I had was quite effeminate, and I used to love dressing him up, and we used to get mistaken for lesbians. And because I felt queer, I remember my mum coming home and Nikki would be in this leopard print little skirt and like my high heels, and I don't know, my mum was quite supportive really of my certainly unorthodox sexuality as a youngster. And I loved getting mistaken for a lesbian, even though I kind of knew I wasn't one. And I had a girlfriend for a bit, and I tried hanging out with the lesbians, and it just didn't fit. It never fit. And then I lived a very straight life for a while, and that didn't seem to particularly fit either. Although, having said that, I'm really aware of this coming out narrative. We were talking earlier with the lovely Helena May, who I'm here visiting in Australia.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, like we were talking, it's come up in conversation, this coming out narrative that almost suggests that before you were living a lie. And I'm really happy that we're starting to acknowledge that you can have very fulfilling lives, numerous. And that the life I was living, say between 20 and 25, where I identified or at least presented as a straight and cisgendered female, that wasn't a lie. I was living a happy life, and I was doing the best with my life that I could at the time. Having said that, when I found my queer community, it was like finding home. And when I found the word queer and realised that I didn't have to be a lesbian, and the gay boys were never going to accept me because I didn't, you know, look like a gay boy, and I didn't have the bits that the gay boys might want. and straight world definitely didn't seem to suit me. And so I found this queer community, and it just changed my life. And then gender just became my geek topic. I got really into sex education, and the idea of sexuality and how we access pleasure. And I realised that all these rules and lessons we're taught that are so salient in society about our bodies and what we're supposed to do with them if we are a girl who likes girls, or a boy who likes boys, or a straight person, it's rubbish. And so over the last 2 or 3 years, that's become my area of sort of academic interest. And the more I've stepped into that role as educator, the more I've had to sort of look inside and start asking some questions about my own identity. And that's how we get here today. I'm using gender-neutral pronouns. That feels right for me at the moment. I don't know what the future holds. I still fall in love with gay men, and one of the happiest times of my life was being mistaken as a drag queen. I felt extremely proud and very seen by a fellow drag queen. And I don't know what all of that means, but I do know that we need to start talking about it.
Do you think that for you in particular, because it was a topic that you were particularly interested in about, you know, gender and pronouns, and something that you took on, you know, as an educator, excuse me, that it assisted and opened up, you know, more parts of your brain for your own personal journey?
It's really interesting. I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg, really.
It was pretty much a chicken and an egg thing, isn't it?
And it was a bit of a, I think it might have been like a, you know, a self-fulfilling
prophecy.
Yeah. Like, I remember writing, when I first started writing what was going to be an article and what later became a talk that I give in the UK about gender and genitals. I remember practicing it with my cisgendered husband at the river at the back of our house. And after I'd run through it, he looked at me and said, "Is this your coming out speech?" And it was the first time I had thought that he'd... It's the first time I'd really realised that he'd noticed that I didn't have a normative gender. Mm. And that I perhaps wanted to change my gender expression to more closely align with my identity, with how I feel. And it was the first time I realised that, yes, it probably is a bit of a coming out speech. Yeah, and it still feels terrifying to say, and I don't know if that will ever go away.
But as you said, I mean, you know, like I think for me personally, I look at it, you know, regardless of, you know, how you identify or where you are in the world, where... As humans, the biggest thing that we can be enlightened about ourselves is every single hour of every single day we're evolving. Mm. And the day that we think that we've stopped evolving, we might as well be dead. Mm. Because we evolve as we die. And for some people, the gender and the binary and everything is part of that evolution of where you actually want to be and where you fit and where you feel that you are. So, you know, for some people that is, you know, for you, it is maybe a different, you know, everyone's got a different evolution. Mm. So, you know, that's, you know, I don't know, does it make sense?
Absolutely.
It's part of your chicken and egg evolution in a way. Yeah.
Yeah. And I certainly believe as well that we are plural human beings. We all have plural stories and we're certainly not static. Yeah.
So where did you go then? Like, for basically, you decided to start working then as an educator. How was it for you sort of starting to, because it was a big change in journey for you?
I mean, not really. I had done sort of 4 years of sex work, of spanking in the UK. It's a bit of a thing, English vice. And what that work had enabled me to do, interestingly, it was a very heteronormative and feminine persona that I had to work with, and the clients that I attracted were predominantly straight, middle upper class men in their 50s to 70s, say. And I had an awful, and still have an awful lot of clients who fall into that bracket. And what the years in that job, and that's still my bread and butter money, because that's what earns the bucks. The amount of men that I would meet in that role who weren't quite as straight or quite as binary gendered as they would
present
exactly. And that certainly started me questioning, why do we give ourselves these terribly restrictive, constricting roles? There's all these people that come to me for this very sort of fun, simplistic sort of sex act of spanking, and actually what we end up talking about is how traumatized they are, that their cock isn't big enough, or that they, you know, that, and they want to call me sir, and they want to wear the school uniform, and does that make them a perf, and like, what does it mean for them, you know, and all this like terrible trauma that they hold, and it's so frequent. And so actually when I started learning about how gender and sexuality fit together and talking about that, and Helena and I have been friends for years and years, but particularly over the last few years, it's our area of interest. It's the thing that we sit down over a bottle of wine and really, you know, it's all we talk about, really. And so it just didn't feel like a big jump for me.
Wow. What we're going to do is, because you touched on this amazing talk that you give, and I'm going to put you on the spot and get you to do it. But what we're going to do is I normally get my guests to pick music that speaks to them, and we didn't have the Nina Simone track that you really, really liked, but I've got another Nina Simone track.
Brilliant.
That I'm going to play for you. We're going to listen to some quick messages, and then we'll be right back with Holly and Sammy in The Wet Spot on Joy. You are on Joy 94.9. It is Moist Mondays. You are in The Wet Spot with Sammy and Holly, and I've put her on the spot, but we are going to get her to do this amazing speech that she does. So I'm going to shut up and let her talk.
Genitals are awesome. They are these delicious parts of our bodies that give us pleasure. We can have lots of fun on our own with our wonderful genitals, and we can rub them up against other people's lovely genitals. We can put things inside them and put them inside things. You can smush them and squish them and stroke them and suck them and, oh, genitals. The person speaking owns a vulva. I love vulvas. I love my vulva and I love lots of other vulvas. I love the whole concept of vulvas, what they look like and taste like, how they engorge and swell, change colour, produce rivers of goo, how they come in so many different shapes and sizes. What I don't love about vulvas is that so often society makes an assumption that they only belong to women. Based on our genitals, assumptions are made about what gender we are. And the same thing happens the other way around. In most polite forms of society, you meet someone's gender before you meet their genitals. Society takes one look at the person presenting to them and thinks they know what's in their pants. Well, I have news for you, society. You don't. Being the proud owner of a beautiful vulva does not automatically make me a girl, or a woman, or female, or any of the words that describe a gender. In the same vein, being the proud owner of a beautiful vulva who sometimes has sex with other owners of vulvas does not make me a lesbian. Because nothing so far in the information that you have about these two vulva-owning individuals tells you anything about their gender, let alone their orientation. You do not know that I, or any of my vulva-owning lovers, are female until you find out about our gender. Making that assumption can at best feel uncomfortable and at worst be devastating to those being misgendered or misgenitaled. This is a particularly sensitive issue when exclusive spaces are set up based on gender or genitals. Being the owner of a vulva and attending a vulva-only space is fabulous, but it becomes a whole lot less fabulous if this space then also gets referred to as women's space. For all the vulva-owning not women, suddenly this space has been denied to them. They may feel like imposters or invisible. Similarly, if you attend a women's space and it becomes abundantly clear that by these people's standards you must have a vulva in your pants to qualify, then all of a sudden the cock that you have between your legs means that you're no longer welcome in this space. And the fear of being discovered is not one any of us should be facing. I'll put it simply. A room full of people who have vulvas is not a women's space. And a women's space is not necessarily a room full of people who own vulvas. If you set up a space for women, you set up a space for women with all types of genitals, cocks, vulvas, and anything outside of that binary. If you set up a space for men, you set up a space for men with all types of genitals, cocks, vulvas, anything outside of that binary. If you set up space exclusively for vulva owners, then you set up a space for vulva-owning people of all genders, male, female, and everyone outside of that binary. And if you set up a space for cock owners, you set up a space for cock-owning people of all genders, male, female, and everyone outside of the binary. Because genitals do not equal gender. Let me explain why I think that it is so important that we stop conflating the two. To understand the gravity of the importance, first you have to kind of understand that it's my fundamental belief that sex, and by that I mean sexuality, orgasm, the gooey feeling in your guts, the warm buzz in your loins, the feeling that you've had for all time that couldn't put a name to when you were a child, that wonderful, beautiful, inimitable, sexy energy that living things have, eros, it's a big fucking deal. That having it, as much or as little as you like, with others or on your own, is a human right. And it is one that we are ubiquitously and cruelly denying ourselves and others because of the many bizarre and ridiculous rules that we have made around it. Currently, and throughout the passage of time, when we are born, we are assigned a gender based on what bits we have. On this planet, we assign the babies that come out with the dangly wotsits male and the ones who come out with the slitty foldy bits female. And far more often than should ever have been allowed, if the baby's bits are a little ambiguous, then someone else decides which genitals the presenting anomaly more closely resembles and surgically alters the appearance to greater achieve that conformity. So now we are all split into two neat camps based on our bits. Wonderful. But it doesn't stop there. From that very first trip home from the hospital, we are taught constantly, subtly and pervasively about what our gender means. What it means to be normal if you were assigned F, and what it means to be normal if you were assigned M. These social constructs exist globally, and there is absolutely no escape from them in our society. Once you see it, it becomes terrifying. From birth, we are taught precisely how to live based on our assigned gender. This plays out in a million different ways and affects everything from how we play, learn, dance, talk, cry, fight, earn, keep fit, and yes, most crucially, how we fuck. And by that, I mean how we seek pleasure from our wonderful pleasure centres, our minds and our bits. These lessons actually warp our plastic brains, but if you want gender science neurophysiology, then that's a whole other talk. As you were. If you were born with one of those slitty foldy bits that meant you were stamped with the F gender, but discovered as you grew that you were in fact not female, you can probably imagine how difficult a relationship you might have with your genitals. If you had been taught constantly that your vulva is your gender, that it is your vulva's fault that you got assigned this womanhood that you never wanted, might you not start resenting this wonderful, beautiful, pleasure-giving piece of your body? In the same instance, if your cock symbolises a masculinity that you in no way associate with, if this dangly bit between your legs that is so wonderful and pleasure-giving is the source of all that denied you your non-male identity, might you not find it quite tricky to enjoy its beauty and share that beauty with others? When sex and sexuality are so closely linked to our genitals, and our genitals are so pervasively and societally conflated with our gender, we construct a world where if any of these things don't match up correctly, then we have a very turbulent relationship with sex, both sex with ourselves and sex with other people. If we keep telling the world and ourselves that vulva is feminine, vulva is woman, what are we denying our vulva-owning brothers? If we keep telling the world and ourselves that cock is masculine, cock is man, what are we denying our cock-owning sisters? And that's not even mentioning those whose genitals might not fit neatly into the vulva-cock binary, and or those whose gender might not fit neatly into the male-female binary. If society often correctly guesses what bits you've got, if the body you live in and the way you present it to the world has never resulted in people making the wrong assumption about your bits, then you might be wondering what the big deal is. It might never have occurred to you that gender and genitals are not directly correlating aspects of the human condition. Well, there are a very great number of us for whom our genitalia, the subsequent gender that we were assigned at birth, and the gender that we currently occupy, identify, and express do not conform to that which we are taught is normal. There are also a great number of us for whom our genetic gender is not clearly definable by the male-female gender binary, whether that's because of a variation in our chromosomes, that's our X's and Y's, our sex organs, that's our testes and ovaries, or our genitalia, our vulvas and our cocks. Ignorance is really easy to overcome. Let's educate ourselves around queer, trans, non-binary, and intersex. I understand that the reason many of us have never really thought about this is because of our empirical evidence gathering. Well, most girls I meet have vulvas and most boys I meet have cocks. It's a rational thought to have. And that certainly is true of the majority. But we are looking at a majority whereby society so strongly defines our gendered roles and so completely denies us nuance or grey area when it comes to gender that we can never really be sure. If we were born in an alternate universe, whereby you were not assigned a gender at birth, whereby you were given a name and the bits between your legs were of no more importance than if you had an innie or an outie belly button, I often wonder just how many of us would fall so neatly into these two camps of F or M. And of those, how many of us would have the gendered attributes like hair length and clothing type and posture and sports interests? And of those still, how many would have the corresponding genitals that we assign to those genders on this planet? On this bloody planet right now, Earth, where we call home and insist on gendering all our babies using a flawed binary, what spaces do we have available for us to worship our fantastic vulvas or our beautiful cocks or whatever fabulous bits you have down there that doesn't automatically assume your gender or your orientation? It's time to let go of the uncompromising, rigid framework we have set up between the physiological bits of our bodies and the societal constructs of gender. It's time for fluidity, for choice, for grey area and nuance. It's time to end the bitter, painful heartbreak that we inflict on ourselves every day when we contort ourselves to fit the norms. It's time to queer the fuck up.
Uplifting, informing, empowering. Joy 94.9.
You are on Joe 94.9 in the wet spot with Sammy and Holly. I'm just catching my breath.
Me too.
Wow.
I'm very glad.
So while you're catching your breath, I'm going to read out some messages. Now, you can do like these amazing people have done, and you can drop us an SMS on 0427 Joy 949. You can email onair@joy.org.au. And I have my most fabulous girl, Hannah, out there on the front desk, just rocking it out as she does. Give her a buzz on 1300 Joy 949. Got a message in from Elizabeth, who says, thanks for another great program. What a provocative subject. My experience indicates on how early gender definition starts. When my two youngest children were born, both home births, I'd instructed all the people there that I didn't want anyone to call out it's a boy or girl. I wanted to meet each child as a person before having to start relating on a gender level. This seemed to be incredibly difficult for everyone there, and there was much whispering and what is it behind my back as I cradled each newborn in my arms, swaddled in a towel or a rug. It was only for a very short time, about 10 or 15 minutes, but it was so difficult for everyone to deal with. Just my 2 cents worth.
Oh, I feel that so much. One of the reasons I think I won't be able to have children is because I would quite strongly refuse to gender them until they were old enough to show a preference, and I'd be very supportive of that changing as many times, and that would include toilets at school. I'm sure I'd make their lives hell, and many people would call me an abusive parent for that, but I feel so strongly for that person, for that parent.
And we also had a message in from the gorgeous Annie, who says, another fantastic topic, Sammy. Holly, thanks for sharing your story and being open and honest.
Oh, thanks, Annie. It was gorgeous. Nice to meet you.
Now, and also a message in from Hannah, who says, I get wildly excited when people say vulva instead of incorrectly using the word vagina.
Yes!
Hooray for correctly naming our bits.
Thank you very much. It's not the word I normally choose, but I also feel very strongly that vagina, it only refers to one very specific part of that anatomy, and that's not the part I'm talking about. I'm talking about the juicy good bits that feel really nice when you poke them.
Yes, they get mushy, smushy,
yep,
and moist.
Yeah,
my favourite word. Do you know that's one word that freaks the most amount of people out?
That's very strange, isn't it? I like
you
the word
say
moist
panties to somebody, and some people will just head out of the room and not even talk to you.
I'm going to head straight towards you, Sammy.
Hello. Well, you know, we share the favourite word in the world, you know. What can I say?
Exactly.
Now, of course, it is very interesting because, you know, like, similar to Elizabeth's message, you know, I have a son, and, you know, over the time he's sort of, you know, has, you know, not questioned his gender, but, you know, he never had gender-specific toys or clothes, or, you know, he picked out something at a shop that he wanted to wear, and it didn't matter what section it was in or whatever, because, of course, you know, we do it straight from, you know, the department stores, and it's great to see some of the larger toy stores now are actually having genderless aisles.
Thank
rather
God.
Than having boy toys and girl toys. But, you know, my son had Cabbage Patch dolls and trucks and Legos and you know, Barbies and whatever the toys that he sort of felt that, you know, he wanted. I've got a great photo of him when he's about two breastfeeding his Cabbage Patch. You know, it's fabulous.
Lovely.
But, you know, compared to him, you know, like when he started kindergarten, he struggled because he was put in an area where he was like, well, no, these are boys' toys. Mm. So we teach them at a very, very young age about
that. And
that
goes well into adulthood. And never ends, in fact.
But the thing that I find really upsetting is, you know, for, you know, many of our, you know, female-identified listeners out there, regardless of where on the binary or inside, outside the binary they are, is they do, you know, they are struggling a little bit with having to sort of, you know, fit into a box and then having that discussion with somebody that they're seeing or dating about where they go next with sex. Because there's an expectation that if you identify a certain way, that your genitals are matching the way you identify.
And you might like to have a certain type of sex.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is what's interesting about these stereotypes and why I think it affects everyone. Although my focus is my community and, the trans community and queer community, these things that I'm talking about affect the sex lives of absolutely every human because we are taught lots and lots of different stereotypes about sex and sexuality. So even for a cisgendered, straight, vanilla person, they are taught a number of rules that they have to comply with in order to conform to their gender.
I was just going to say, it's almost like it is. They have to conform.
Right. Mm. And so we can list the sort of typical ones that men are supposed to have penises. Those penises are supposed to be hard and they're supposed to ejaculate. Not too quickly, though. And these people are supposed to always want sex and want a type of sex that's normally in a vagina and, you know, all those normative norms. And the same for cisgendered women are supposed to be sort of hard to get and not too wet but not too dry, and they're supposed to need lots of foreplay, and it might be quite difficult for them to orgasm. And, you know, we're taught all these rules that if you then step outside of those, or you feel like you don't belong to those, it can be very othering and very distressing. And so I think straight cisgendered people also have this fear of not fitting in and not knowing where to go with your sex and sexuality if what you like doesn't fit what you're told is normal for your gender and for your bits. And this happens over and over again in the homonormative sphere of sexuality. For example, you get a lesbian couple and you've got your butch dyke and your lipstick lesbian, and
that's the way they're supposed to look, isn't it?
Right. And you ask 100 people which one wears the strap on. They're all going to tell you it's the butch dyke. And why in God's name shouldn't the butch dyke like a good fisting too?
I know. Well, and then they struggle, you know. Like my partner and I, my girl is butch, I'm butch. Mm. And they're like,
Yeah, right.
And
yeah, people don't know how to take
it. In the vanilla lesbian community, you sort of don't know how to tell you. It's like,
Yeah.
So how does it work? Where it's easier to identify who we are within, you know, the leather and kink community because it's very obvious. But it's that whole getting themselves their head around. It's like there's a whole thing within the queer women's community that we're finding. It's like this drop off at either end of the scale at the moment. We're losing and all of these amazing, beautiful, high femme women because they're scared of being who they are because they're not going to, they're sick of being misidentified of their sexuality. And absolutely, the same thing with anyone who is super, super butch dyke. Mm. They're almost like they're having pressure put on them. Well, you must want to be male, so you have to transition.
Yeah, I really feel like that's very true, and certainly in the queer spaces in London, there's lots of talk about femme identities being less visible than sort of queer masculine identities, and perhaps that's patriarchy just repeating itself, and I'm not sure, but I think that those assumptions that we make about identity really, really affect our sex lives and our sexualities, and it needn't. I guess that's why I do the work that I do, and I know that Helena May and some other sex educators in Australia are really doing that work over here as well, is because actually what there is out there is a struggle to find a language that doesn't connote an idea that we all have this raging sexual amazing human inside that's very true and authentic, and you know,
I do.
Well, that's obvious, Sammy. Of course. how silly of me not to notice. I believe that we have access to a great deal more pleasure than we often allow ourselves because of the rules that we make around sex.
Exactly.
And I think if we could let go of some of the assumptions and lessons and stereotypes that we're taught about our bodies and about what sex we should be having and with whom, we could have access to a plethora of things on the menu that we thought were long since gone. The idea that if, you know, for example, how I present and I'm, you know, and I've been told that I can't have gay male lovers, or I can't do sex act, you know, insert sex act with insert the orientation and gender that doesn't suit me, if I may insert my presumed gender and orientation, when that formula then no longer ceases to make sense, actually I can have whatever sex I want with whoever consents to have it in whichever way I like. And I think that option is open to all of us if we can put down some of these rules.
Yep.
And it's really interesting you talk about kink, because for me, how I sort of segued into this world is through kink and other types of having sex which don't necessarily include genitals or are gender non-specific. And that's so important for our queer communities. If you have a queer body, a queer identity, it can be really difficult to navigate this stuff. It can be very triggering. It's something that I work a lot with one-on-one. But finding a space where you can play and just relish in the body that you have with the people that you want to play with and enjoy that that sexual connection, whatever that is, whether that's genital based or kink based or play fight based, you know, that's something that I'd like to support and see more and more of.
So, of course, you know, we can tell by listening to your amazing accent all night that so many people out there are going, huh. you're not from Australia.
Nope, I'm not.
So, what brought you here? Why are you here? Because you're doing some amazing stuff while you're here. And because, like, we have to be out of here in, like, 2 minutes. And yep. I don't want to miss out on talking about some amazing things that you're doing while you're here.
Yeah. So I'm here primarily to support my very good friend, Helena May.
Who we love, love, love.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Who I listened to your show with her, and it was amazing. And I've been out here for the Janet Hardy tour, which some of you in Melbourne might have been to some of the events. And there's some coming up. And I'm also delivering a genderless sex workshop, which will be piloting that workshop.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, and I'm connecting with the wonderful queer, kinky community that you have here in Melbourne, that just feels like a home from home for me. And I'm absolutely devastated to say that I'm going home just shy of a wonderful event called Discovery, which had its inaugural event just before I arrived, and we'll be having its second event in about 2 weeks' time, which is run by Helena May and Roger Barnett. And I'm just so gutted not to be there. So I think anyone in Melbourne who can get to it should live, so I can live vicariously through you on the other side of the planet.
Now, the Discovery, we can, I think the last time we spoke, when I spoke to Helena, is on Facebook. You just Google Discovery Workshop.
Yeah, it's a workshop and play party run by Helena May. And I'm sure if you find Helena May on Facebook, you'll be able to find Discovery. But it's exactly what I was talking about. It's setting up a safe space with a workshop, first of all, whereby participants learn about consent, learn about not making assumptions, learn about safe words, learn how to play safely, authentically. And then in the evening, you have a play party where you get to try out all those tools. And the people going know that they're not going to be misgendered, touched without consent. You know, that framework is already set up so that you can go and have a really good time.
Yeah. And it's one of those spaces that is safe, and you don't have to say, you know, I've been, you know, playing in the kink community for 10 years and this is who I am as a person, I'm whatever. You can actually just say, I really want to learn more about this, or I want to be in a space that's safe.
I'm just me and I feel drawn to be here, and you won't have to pick a gendered toilet,
Awesome. I'm devoed because we don't have another 3 hours to continue.
We didn't even get to the juicy, sexy stuff. Oh. Another time, maybe off air.
Yes. Yes.
That wasn't a proposition.
My girl's listening.
I so nearly got through that without flirting, but
yeah,
no.
Yeah, you did. That's all right. Now, Holly, thank you just so much. It has just been an absolute delight and a half having you in the studio and being able to cover, you know, just such an amazing topic, and that like I said, we could talk about it for 5 hours and it still wouldn't be enough time. And just thank you for having me. Helena May for organizing it all. Again, I owe her more million kisses.
My wonderful agent.
I just said I want you and she's like, okay. So we're gonna get out of here. Until next week, ladies, don't forget, stay moist.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.